About a decade ago, somebody put your picture on a piece of cardboard. At some point, you signed it. And this week, it was worth almost $4 million. You have any context that when you heard that, what goes through your head?
It's pretty incredible. You know, it's just as a kid, you know, having baseball cards and having, you know, when you get to the show, you get or when you get drafted, you get your own card. And, you know, just have a price tag on that. Maybe I should have kept that one.
That is MLB megastar Mike Trout reacting to his rookie card, setting an all-time record for price paid at auction this year. Despite the pandemic, the trading card market in 2020 has somehow been hotter than ever before. Today, how and why the industry went from a kid's hobby to an asset class for hedge fund managers, and meet the people who took it there. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, December 29th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Dan, I want you to help explain exactly how wild this year has been for sports cards with an example. And that example that sticks out to me and shocks me every time I consider it is this record-setting Mike Trout card. Can you tell me a little bit about the card itself?
So it's a 2009 Bowman Chrome Superfractor.
Dan Hayducky is a writer and researcher for ESPN and a card collector himself.
It's got an autograph on it, Mike Trout's autograph on it. It's graded. Basically, there are three companies, Professional Sport Authenticator, Beckett, and SGC. They grade how perfect on a scale of 1 to 10 a card is. So this Mike Trout card is a 9. So it's pretty close to perfect, but the autograph is graded at 10. So it's really close to a perfect card. And also, it's a Trout rookie card. And also, on top of that, it's a 1 of 1. So there is only one of these in existence.
Yeah, it's so interesting because Mike Trout in public is like a semi-anonymous celebrity. Like a lot of fans, casual fans in sports even, don't really know him. But this card, this 1 of 1 card with the perfect autograph, what did it actually go for?
It went for $3.93 million.
A new record has been set for the most valuable baseball card in history. Somebody paid $3.9 million for this Mike Trout rookie card.
I know that when Joe Maddon was sort of confronted with the information that he had a player whose card sold for that much, he was like, how much does the Mona Lisa go for?
Wow. You know, I'm into art. That puts him right up there with what does the Mona Lisa sell for? What is anything by Da Vinci? Or wow, that's pretty phenomenal.
And that's a fair question.
And what was the previous record holder in terms of the most valuable card that had ever been sold at auction?
And the previous Holy Grail was, you know, the Honus Wagner T206. It's a turn of the century to the 20th century, like early 1900s card. It's got such a lore behind it. That's not happening with a Mike Trout card. There's no incredible backstory to how this card exists. It's modern. It's not easy to obtain, but it's not like, a tobacco card that was pulled from production. And really what happened with the Wagner was, one school of thought is that Wagner didn't like that his likeness was being used to sell tobacco to kids. So he objected, they pulled the card from production, and that was that. The other less known school of thought is that Wagner knew he wouldn't be compensated for his likeness. So he objected because he wouldn't be paid, and if that's the truth, which is, I like this story a lot better, it would be the earliest flexing of an athlete's brand autonomy.
It is remarkable what you say, though, the difference between this Honus Wagner card, which does, like, looking at it, I'm looking at it right now on my screen. It's like this historical American artifact. It reminds me of, like, a daguerreotype from, like, the Civil War or something. It looks important and ancient. And the Trout card, the fact that this object can be worth more than any other thing that came before, in modern times. And the guy who sold this Mike Trout card, Dan, for this terrifyingly large amount is a man named Ken Golden. So tell me a little bit more about him. What's the business that that guy runs?
Golden is Ken Golden of Golden Auctions.
Zion Williamson's blown out Nike sneaker. How much is that thing worth, Ken, in your eyes?
To me, it's definitely a six-figure iconic piece. It is the most famous pair of sneakers in the world.
And he, I mean, it's arguably the most renowned auction house for memorabilia and sports cards.
If it ever went up for auction, it would be a fight between Nike and a collector. I mean, there are basketball collectors out there who have privately paid $750,000 and up for artifacts.
He basically said, you know, since COVID started, he's been getting venture capitalist hedge fund managers just basically throwing money at him, asking for cards to invest in. And he sort of steers them towards cards that he thinks are worth investing in. And he says, going forward, all of these people say that this is not a short-term thing. This is acquiring cards. The new fine art is how they're going to be operating going forward.
Yeah. So compared to when you and I were collecting as kids, it's so vastly different that I want to understand how and why. But like, describe for us how the trading card business looked like in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s.
It's night and day. You know, in the 70s and 80s, in the early 90s even, there was massive overproduction. There was really no accountability in the industry as to how many cards they could produce. It really underwent a tremendous rejuvenation in, for me, the big thing was the serial numbering of cards. There's accountability now. How many can each company produce?
In my memory, Dan, like, I think about the famous cards that really shot up in value. Like, sometimes it was like this quirk or a misprint. It was like this accidental error. I remember Billy Ripken having that famous error card that had face written on the knob of his bat. And that became this magical artifact because that shouldn't have existed.
Oh, there we go. We got the Bill Ripken. There we go. It's the black box card. I said that was the one we were likely to find. This card is still worth about, I think, probably sells for about $5. It's worth more than Cal Ripken Jr., his brother, who's a Hall of Famer.
This now seems to be so much more data-driven. And in the era of the internet, getting that much more advanced and strategic. So just describe to me, like, when a card used to get hot in the way that it would, like, what were some of the drivers back in the day?
It used to be like, oh, this company messed up, so we have to get our hands on that. They've messed up. We need to capitalize on it. Now it's like, I mean, the cards that we were talking about before that Golden has brokered the sales for, all of those cards are rookie cards. People seize on rookie cards, and you're, in a way, you're buying low in hopes that you'll sell high later. But with people like LeBron, now it's astronomical.
I mean, you're still playing, and it's not like you're Honus Wagner or Babe Ruth or something. How do you kind of take that in when somebody's paying $1.8 million for your rookie card?
I think it's pretty cool. That's the first thing I think about, and think about where I come from. You know, hearing those numbers, you didn't hear those numbers much growing up, you know, obviously where I'm from. And the second thing I think about is I have two rookie cards of my own, so I'll be good for a very, very long time.
All right, coming up, I want to move from LeBron to a Wisconsin economist and talk more about all the people behind the scenes who've made trading cards such a lucrative market.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, They're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So in talking to people for this piece, you met a person who you say is an embodiment of the past 40 years of baseball cards in America, a guy named John List, who started off as a casual fan and collector in Wisconsin and then ended up becoming a lot more than that. So how would you introduce John List?
Basically, he was growing up in, you know, Green Bay, Packers fan. He would mow lawns, he would shovel driveways, he would, you know, he got a paper route to pay for cards. You know, he went to the University of Wisconsin, Stephen Point, so as an economics major, but and he would still moonlight as a dealer on conventions. And he started using these convention circuits that he was on as a way to do early field experiments. And now he's one of America's foremost authorities in economics. And it all started with sports cards for him. He sort of said, oh yeah, Wall Street should have invaded the industry sooner. He was sort of like, if you think about what cards are, they're relatively stable assets that you can use to hedge other parts of your portfolio. And I guess I never looked at cards that way. I didn't think about them as assets.
So a guy like that, who is obviously extraordinarily well-versed in the laws of supply and demand, and what is the type of card that he is most focused on in his portfolio? What is the thing that he is most excited about?
For him, he was talking to me about how he was trying to corner the market on one card. And unfortunately, the only way that I was able to use that quote was if I promised to not admit what card it was. He didn't want people out there to know. He didn't even want me to know at first.
So what can you say publicly, given your covenant with this economist?
I can say that it's a 1982 Cops card. He says that he knows that there are 262 PSA 10s of this card.
And so I imagine, like, he has one of them already.
Oh, he definitely has one of them. He has 80 of them. So he was sort of describing to me the process of how he acquired them. And you know, he said he's paid really varying sums for a lot of them, which I find kind of interesting, given that they're all PSA 10s. I guess if you knew what card it was, you'd be surprised.
So this notion of there being a PSA 10, for those who are uninitiated into the cult of grading, Dan, how would you explain what that even is?
If you're talking about a PSA 10, PSA, professional sport authenticator, they grade every card on a scale from 1 to 10.
If you're watching this video, you probably want to learn how to get more PSA gym mint 10s into your collection.
I'm going to show you how. You know, Are there any blemishes on the surface? Are the edges okay? If there's an autograph, how good is the autograph?
Sometimes you'll see alignment issues like that. You'll look at text and lines when it comes from the stamp and the ink, and you can verify and make sure that that is indeed aligned.
And based on how high on the scale it ranks, 1 to 10, it can be the difference between thousands and tens of thousands of dollars if you're talking about a vintage car.
Who are the people who get to make these calls that cause all these rises and falls in value?
There's a sort of like CD quality to how you imagine it. It's like, oh, these guys in a dark room underneath a light microscope. But that's generally the consensus. It's guys in a dark room with a microscope. It's both the first thing that people criticize about the industry, and it's also the thing that everybody in the industry knows is vital to their, you know, lifeblood.
So, Dan, your story covers the sports card industry and all the changes, like all things in America right now, in the world right now, because of the pandemic. So what is this business otherwise usually like with in-person business and trade shows and auctions being done? What's it like to be at one of those events?
Everyone that I've talked to about it just describes it as like Christmas. I mean, it's like Comic-Con and Christmas combined, I guess. There are people young and old. There are parents getting their kids into it. There are high rollers. There are, you know, people opening boxes in the corner and stuff. It's everything you can want. So having that sort of fanfare be ripped away from the industry, I thought it was all going to come crashing down. It was a very, it's a once in a century moment where the world stops and people had to stay in their home. And some of those people had a lot of money and I think they wanted to look for new ways to invest. And I can't tell you what the reason was, but a lot of those people picked sports cards. There was actually this piece in The Atlantic from Eric Moskowitz from, it came out like end of October of last year. And he had this line that I just think is perfect. It's baseball card collecting really ought to be extinct. It's an analog hobby in a digital world. And somehow it's thriving.
And one of these figures who has thrived in this strangely dissonant world is a guy you talked to in the piece named Rick Probstein. Tell me about the business that Rick operates.
Rick operates a auction house in New Jersey. He is eBay's king of cards. He's a pretty divisive figure in the industry. The beginning of the story is when I walked into his building and I saw, you know, the Mickey Mantle cards, the Babe Ruth autograph, the LeBron cards.
It's like a museum, right? Like a museum or a vault that you've now entered.
He was a .com headhunter around the time of the Great Recession. And he said, you know, he was always a card guy. He was always a convention guy. But when the Great Recession hit, like overnight, he just sort of lost all of his clients. And he was already moonlighting selling cards for someone. There was a guy that he would broker cards for. And he said, I think I can just do this full time. And that's where he's been since. And, you know, last year he recorded, you know, reportedly 50 million in sales. And I said this year, well, it's got to be not going well. I can't imagine. And he's like, no, we haven't seen any downturn, even with COVID. Our Asian market is never took a hit. He said, I'm projecting 75 million in sales this year.
So we're talking about an auction house doing $75 million in sales, Dan. And based on that number, which is astronomical, there's obviously going to be some scrutiny around how they run that business. So you mentioned this king of cards, Rick Probstein, and that he's this divisive figure. Tell me about the class action suit that was filed against him and then dropped.
Yeah, so the class action lawsuit that was filed that he was a part of was accusing him of manipulation of prices during live auction and shill bidding, essentially false bids to raise the price of a card. I believe that the case was dismissed because there was some jurisdictionary issues and there wasn't enough proof, but it's something that's always followed him around. He wouldn't be the first person in the industry to have done something like that, but you know, as it stands right now, there's nothing really we can accuse him of. But the big one that comes to mind is Bill Mastro, who's a guy that, oh man, it's a long story, but this guy, Bill Mastro, is the head of Mastro Auctions. He sold Wayne Gretzky a Honus Wagner card, and there were concerns about the Gretzky Wagner that it was doctored. And there's a whole subculture of card doctors that make money just getting the grade up on a card.
So just to clarify, this is like a cardinal sin in memorabilia, right? The idea that you would go in and edit this artifact.
Yeah. Mastro would eventually plead guilty to doctoring this Wagner card. And what he did was he took like a paper cutter and he trimmed the edges and made it better. So he eventually went to prison for 20 months for this, for fraud. Mm. And in the meantime, even while all that was happening, Ken Kendrick, the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, bought the Gretzky Wagner and still owns it to this day, as far as we know.
The edited, doctored one?
Yeah. Now, I don't think he knew that, because that was all resolved in court afterward, after he bought it. But as far as we know, he still owns it.
So, Dan, where is doing all this reporting left you in exploring your own collecting history?
We don't have a lot of places to go right now. So, you know, I was sort of getting back into my collection while I was doing the story. And actually, last night I was on the phone with my parents talking about when on a family vacation I could have gotten this one card. It's a 2001 UD Reserve. It's got four pieces of jersey in it. Andrew Jones, Alex Rodriguez, Sammy Sosa, and Barry Bonds. And I thought that It was on a certain trip to San Diego with a family trip, my grandparents' 50th anniversary. And my dad and I went to the store with my uncle. We almost drove into Mexico. It was a really cool thing. And that's the memory I had of this card. And in reality, when I tried to fact check it, I called my parents last night and they were like, oh no, that's not possible. That couldn't have been on that trip. So we ended up going, they went through like the photo albums of family vacations on the other line. And they were like, could it have been this year? Could it have been this year? And we ended up talking about all these trips that we went on and memories of my Nana and Papa who have passed away and, you know, pets that we had that passed away that we have pictures of. And I sort of realized that, like, that's what the value of cards are. They're totems of nostalgia, but it doesn't really matter how much it's worth. It's about that I had an hour conversation with my parents about all the things that we've done and seen.
Dan Hayducky, thank you for reminiscing about our childhoods and giving us a window into a strange, terrifying future.
Hey, man, a pleasure's all mine.
While trading cards memorialize players, Mike Greenberg tells us about why baseball's return in 2020 was unforgettable in its own way.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another voice I want you to hear. This year has been overwhelming, unprecedented, incomprehensible, insert your synonym of choice here. But one of the things we'll never forget is when sports finally came back into our lives after hitting pause in the spring. This is Mike Greenberg on the return of baseball in 2020.
January 15th, 1942, a month after Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt wrote the green light letter to baseball's commissioner, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, in which he said, quote, "I honestly feel it would be best for the country to keep baseball going." FDR knew then what we have come to learn time and again in sports, that the really important games are not meaningful because of who won or lost, but rather for the simple fact that they were played at all.
And it's in deep to left center. This one has a chance. Home run, Mike Piazza.
And so, 266 days since the last game that counted had been played, the Yankees and the Nationals took the field. It was the longest stretch of time in this country without a baseball game since 1871.
And the season is underway in D.C.
Long after we forget who threw the first pitch or who hit the first home run.
Stanton, high fly ball back there on its way and gone.
Long after we forget the final score was 4-1 New York, we will remember what it looked like and sounded like. What it felt like to have baseball back. Of course, our national pastime provided all sorts of memories over the following 3 months.
Welcome to Slam Diego!
Kelly with a little something for him at the end.
Happy birthday, Trouty!
Shot, and he caught it!
Strike three call! The Los Angeles Dodgers have won the World Series.
But for so many of us, that first day was the best. And it really didn't matter who won. The important part was just simply that they were playing at all.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.